is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the NFL Wire site about the Arizona Cardinals from the USA Today NFL Wire. My co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from AvengeTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site. And it is Combine Week. The NFL Combine has officially begun. And as a result of that, we actually, this is kind of a momentous occasion. This isn't the first time we haven't had someone else on the show, but it will be the very first time that we have someone with Seth on the show. We're going three-way today. We've got Seth, as always, on the line. We have a special guest from Seth's site, RevengeOfTheBirds.com, one of their staff writers, someone that's contributors there, Justin Higdon, part of the former, for those of you out there who followed Seth on the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast, Justin Higdon is a familiar face as the two of them talked draft all the time in previous years, and we bring him on kind of as so that you have to hear less of me. It'll be lots of Seth and lots of Justin talking about the NFL Combine and the players going on there. Justin, welcome to the show. How has everything been for you?
Join you guys. Everything's been going well. I'm kind of like semi-retired right now, but I always kind of, the last couple of years I surface around this time of year because the Combine is one of my favorite events of the year, and it's always great to reunite with Seth. I know we have some people out there, they're always asking us if we're ever going to start up the podcast again. And I think that's something that we would like to do eventually. So maybe this could be a preview.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Welcome, Seth, as always. How's everything over in your part of the world? Which is,
it's good, man.
A few miles away from me.
Yeah, it's good. It's busy, but this will be the last week of crazy, and then it's a little bit back to normal for us. So I'm just looking forward to getting through this week, and then we can focus on the draft and NFL free agency and spring break. I mean, like, real life stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's real information and real misinformation already coming out of the Combine. This is episode 259. This is what we've got on tap for this edition. We'll be talking about, well, the players that we're most excited to see, what we want to see from these particular players at the Combine. Who are the players most who have the most to gain and most to lose with their Combine performance and measurements and everything? Specifically, we'll look at the offensive line and the receivers, kind of talk about what are the measurables that matter, what are the numbers and the testing numbers that matter, and who could stand out, who could flop, who could surprise, and as well we'll look at kind of the front seven. And kind of programming the next few weeks. Seth and I will have a show next week where we kind of review the Combine. General Manager Steve Keying and Cliff Kingsbury, head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, they address the media on Tuesday, as we're recording on a Tuesday night. We're going to push that off to next week, kind of hash through what they discussed, what they talked about, and as we start to see some of the actual testing numbers come in and what the players and prospects have said to the media, we'll kind of hash that out. Then move on the week after that. Later in the week, we will preview free agency. And then after free agency starts later in March, we'll review that, and then we'll start hot and heavy and getting ready for the draft as we are now in the heavy part of the off season. Really, it's ramping up, and until about May, we're going to have regular content on the show. So let's go ahead and get started with the players we're most excited to see at the Combine and why. We'll turn it over to Justin first to have Seth talk about his, and I'll even talk a little bit about the players I'm most intrigued to see. Justin, you're up.
Yeah, so we already know at this point that a couple of the big names are not working out. We saw that Chase Young is not going to work out, Joe Burrow is not going to work out, and a couple other names, I think Javon Kinlaw is is nursing an injury, and Kalavon Chase on. So, you know, I'm trying to focus on the guys who are going to work out and are expected to do very well. So Jonathan Taylor, he's my favorite running back in the class. I think I see ratings where he's ranked as low as running back 5. I think it's kind of crazy. He came in, weighed in at 226, and he's expected to run a 40 in about 4.4. And I could even see him, you know, Bruce Feldman reported back in the summer that Taylor ran a sub 4.4. If he does that at 226, the internet's going to freak out. You're going to see a lot of draft nicks talking about how they have to go back to the tape, and he's magically going to rise from running back 5, running back 3, up to running back 1. I think he's been there all along. We'll see some adjustment if Taylor tests the way I expect. Isaiah Simmons, if he does work out, and as far as I know, he's expected to, he's supposed to blow the doors off. I think Dane Brugler for The Athletic wrote that they might end up renaming the combine after him. His workout's expected to be so fantastic. My favorite receiver is T. Higgins from Clemson, and I expect him to run faster than people think, so I'm excited to see that. He says he can run about a 4.4, so I'm looking forward to seeing if that's the case. If he goes sub 4.5, again, you're going to see some people adjusting their rankings. And then I got to name a Buckeye here as an Ohio State alum, Jeff Okuda. If he works out, he's the clear top cornerback in the draft, and he's going to have a fantastic combine if he does all the drills. And then the last guy I have is the Penn State defensive end, Yetur Gross-Matos. And the reason I put him on, not only is he expected to have a fantastic workout and do very well in all of the athletic testing, but that defensive end number 2, there's a gap between Chase Young and that next guy. With Chase on not working out, Gross-Matos has a chance with a good week to move into that slot, and that could end up putting him into the top 10. So I really like those guys are the guys I'm really focused on this week.
Seth, give us your thoughts on the guys you're paying attention to most.
I mean, when you look at this, combine, Justin and I always kind of talk about the fact that there's a lot of good information that you get from here, but I think the biggest information you get is kind of guys that you maybe not write off, but like you move down or even take off, you know, like your first two round type things. And so, you know, in that, I think for me, the first guy, and it has nothing to do with the Cardinals, at least I hope not, but Tua Tagovailoa, I'm really interested to see how the medicals and the kind of whispers and rumors that come back from this, because I do think it might end up being something that comes into play for the Cardinals, in that if Tua comes back and his last check was, you know, resoundingly looked at as a good thing, if Tua comes back and gets another really good report, I think that's going to help the Cardinals in terms of potentially being able to, you know, trade down and get some more picks if that's something they want to do. A local guy that I'm interested in and somebody I've talked to Justin about quite a bit is Brandon Ayuk out of Arizona State. We've talked a little bit about the Cardinals' need at wide receiver, and so Ayuk is a guy that I'm interested to see if he can be that kind of outside bigger body guy or take the top off the defense guy, because I feel like they've got a lot of the same or similar guys in terms of what their strengths are. If Ayuk comes out and runs well, because he has the same kind of Christian Kirk short area ability, but if he comes out and runs even faster because he's a bit bigger, then I think that would be a good thing. Another guy that I'm really interested in, and again, it comes back to medicals, but the way the Cardinals have set themselves up is that they don't really have to take an offensive lineman in the first round. But they could use a guy on day two to kind of get ready in case the DJ Humphries extension flops, or, you know, in case Justin Murray isn't able to build on what was a solid, you know, 2019. And a guy that I've kind of been interested in is Trey Adams, because he's a guy that was supposed to be kind of a first round guy at Washington, and then he's been nothing but injured. And so he's the type of guy that you end up getting, you know, on day three because of those injury concerns, that goes out and is able to, you know, become a worthwhile starter. And as much as Cardinals fans want to see guys that are first round draft picks or early draft picks, you know, most solid offensive lines consist, you know, of two or three starters picked up on day three of the draft.
For me, as I look at what I want to see in the draft, it's almost always Cardinals centric on my end. Now, there is the element of the Brandon Ayuk. So there's the Arizona State products I want to see, but that's also in part because of the intrigue at the positions for the Cardinals. So Ayuk is a guy I want to see. Now, his measurables in terms of hand size are kind of out of this world for his height, since he's a little under 6 feet. I expect him to run a very fast 40. His game speed is quite impressive. But it'll be kind of interesting, because if the Cardinals don't go receiver in round one, we seem to feel like they're going to go receiver round two, very possibly, because they need that other big play guy, someone on the outside. They need someone to fill that role, to be a true alpha in that room. Ayuk took over very ably from N'Keal Harry, who was largely considered probably the best overall receiver talent that the Cardinals, I mean, that the Sun Devils have ever seen, and then put together a season that really was quite incredible across the board in terms of the type of things that he did. He offers a lot of, like Seth was saying, a lot of Christian Kirk type things. You can use him in screens, you can use him in the return game, but he has what I believe is the long speed to be able to do more outside. That said, you know, Benjamin, running back out of Arizona State as well, I want to see what his speed looks like, because his gameplay, now it wasn't as good as his 2018 season, but he's got the work, like he can be a workhorse. He gains yards, he can catch the ball, he can block. Is he going to be productive at the next level, or is he going to end up being a DJ Foster type, or even Stephon Taylor, as we've kind of seen a lot of these Pac-12 running backs who are large, like very productive in college. Now, at the top, at receiver for me, it comes down, and this is a discussion that if you've been following me at all on Twitter, because I've been sharing what my 18-year-old son Diego has been sharing, who is the biggest, maybe the second biggest CeeDee Lamb honk for the Cardinals behind Kyler Murray. I want to see what the testing numbers look like with those top three receivers, CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, and Henry Ruggs. Daniel Jeremiah suggested that Ruggs might even get in the mix for that top receiver spot. And Cliff Kingsbury wants a guy kind of like that. If he blows people away, which I think he will, That could put him in the discussion. While Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb want to see the speed, we know what they did in college. We know what Jeudy can do in terms of have the polished route runner. He's very fluid, very smooth. And CeeDee Lamb has the production. You know he's physical. He's going to go up and get the ball. He's got an element to his game that the Cardinals have been missing, and to see his long speed would be great, especially since my son tells me what he ran across on Twitter is that CeeDee has run a 4.3 in the 4.3, a sub 4.4 40 hand timed. So it'll be interesting to see if he runs, how like when he runs, what that turns out to be. I'm interested in some of the measurables on some of the offensive linemen that we could see near the top of the draft as those players will come into play, and Justin will give us a little bit of a look at what matters in terms of that. But those are kind of the main things. Isaiah Simmons is intriguing, as we've discussed on this show. Seth has brought up that with the athleticism and what the versatility, he looks like a slam dunk, but the fact that the lack of experience or the lack of significant experience at that inside linebacker position is an interesting thing to do, because we know he's going to have the physical skills. He was the leader on the defense. Can he do that more, or will it require someone like Vance Joseph to be more creative with him in a role, especially at a position where he likes to do things kind of traditionally with that inside linebacker position? So those are kind of mine's really Cardinals central. It's actually really Cardinals and ASU centric. Obviously there's a few other guys out there that I'm interested to see, but mainly it's how do the linemen test, how do the receivers test, and then on a smaller level, how the running backs test, since it's beginning to me to feel like Kenyon Drake is probably going to move on, which means the Cardinals are going to roll with David Johnson unless they move him too, which it feels like it's going to doubt. And if that happens, you kind of feel like they're going to add a running back and probably day two. If they can, they'll probably do that. Anything else you guys want to add? So coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we will move on and talk about, well, who are the players that have the most to lose or the most to gain? Who can help and who can hurt themselves with the performance of the combine? That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Moving on to the players. So this is a time of year when players can help or hurt their stock. Well, it's more of a perception thing. It's more of perception among media and fans. I don't know how much. I think as Justin will say, it'll cause people to go back and look at the tape if they test better or they test worse than expected or measure worse than is ideal. It'll kind of make people go back and think some more. But let's actually start with Seth this time. For you, who are the players that have the most to gain in terms of who can gain the most by a great combine performance this week?
I think you kind of hit on it earlier, but like a guy like Henry Ruggs, he's supposed to contest John Ross's record. Justin and I don't seem to think that he'll get there, because it's stupid fast. But when you run stupid fast in the NFL, NFL teams tend to draft you, especially high. I mean, you look at John Ross, he was a top 10 pick. Will Fuller a couple years ago was a first round pick when most people didn't think he would be. So I think if Ruggs gets below a 4.3, and he's pretty much a first round lock already, but you could start to hear the conversations about him going, top 12, top 10, because that's something different than even these fast guys. I mean, a lot of people I've seen talk about Ruggs in terms of a comparison, but to me, the highest end, and obviously it's super high end, would be like a Tyreek Hill type player, a guy that can play in a number of different positions and ways, and when he does that, he's able to kind of, put pressure on defense. And you see what the difference is for the Chiefs when Hill is in versus when he's not, and how good their offense is. Obviously, only Patrick Mahomes is more important to that offense.
Well, I sticking with what Seth said, I think for me, receivers have the most to gain and lose, because there's this huge jumble of receivers between the first round through the third round. We're hearing guys like Daniel Jeremiah say there are 27 or 30 receivers with day one or day two grades. I think Mel Kiper said that as well, and that's not realistic to see that many players at one position be picked in the first three rounds. So the combine is going to be a chance for a lot of these guys to separate themselves and to see which ones get into those first three rounds versus which ones kind of fall off. You guys were talking about Ayuk. Jess, as you said, if he runs a great 40, then, you know, if he's sub 4.4, say, that's probably going to get him into the first 2 days. If he doesn't, then he might be a guy who's a value pick on day three because he doesn't have maybe the track record as some of these other guys. So a couple of receivers that I have in mind that have a lot to gain are Donovan Peoples-Jones from Michigan, who is going to have an excellent week with testing. If he goes through all the tests, he's going to probably be a 4.4 guy, maybe even a little faster than that. He ran a low 4.4 coming out of high school, and he weighed in with a great weigh-in, about 212 pounds. He didn't have a lot of stats, but he played through injury, played with some subpar quarterback play at Michigan. So he's got a chance to elevate his stock. Jeff Thomas from Miami had some off-the-field issues, almost transferred, then didn't. But he might challenge Ruggs and Jalen Reagor for fastest 40 time among receivers. Like Seth was saying, Will Fuller got himself into the first round with a 4.31 a couple of years ago. I think Ruggs is going to be right around there, maybe. Maybe even a high 4.2. So Ruggs can secure his path to a first-round pick that way. Then you might see Reagor also do that. Jeff Thomas is probably not going that high. But if he runs a sub 4.3 or something like that, he could move in up higher than anybody expects. So receivers, there's a lot of movement that's possible. And I think with offensive tackles, you have the same kind of idea because – you have a lot of highly touted players, and how many of those are going to go very high, and they're going to have that athletic testing to separate themselves from the pack. So you might see guys like Tristan Wirfs move up because of great athletic testing, and then some of the bigger guys move down if they don't test as well, kind of like Orlando Brown did a couple years ago. I wanted to say a couple other players who have a lot to gain are, it's another deep position running back where you have a lot of players who were kind of considered top tier running backs who measured in very small. DeAndre Swift was about 212, decent size, but not real big. And J.K. Dobbins weighed in under 210. So that kind of leaves the door open for a guy like Cam Akers to move into the top three if he has a great workout. And A.J. Dillon from Boston College is a player who's expected – he weighed in at the same weight as Derrick Henry, and he's expected to test that way too, maybe even a little better. That could elevate his stock. And lastly, the underclassmen quarterbacks, Jacob Eason, Jake Fromm, even Cole McDonald, because they have not had a chance. They haven't had Senior Bowl auditions yet. And with a player like Burrow not throwing, maybe these guys can elevate their stock with some good workouts.
You mentioned the offensive linemen, and I mean, anybody that follows Revenge of the Birds or talks to me knows that I've been a big honk for the kid from Houston, Josh Jones. And I think he's going to be kind of that Andre Dillard type, you know, in this draft class where he's going to get a lot of hype coming out of combine. And that's one of the things that Justin and I used to talk about quite a bit, was that Senior Bowl and combine is really a time for guys that write to find out what guys in the NFL actually think. And so it's not like a shot at them, because I mean, a lot of these guys are one-man shows or, you know, they're small teams of guys doing draft coverage stuff. But one of the things that you tend to see is guys that have, you know, good combines that all of a sudden start to climb in these people's rankings. And then you find out, like, oh, well, you know, the NFL liked Josh Jones from the jump, like, you know, or Henry Ruggs or any of these guys. Whereas they, you know, in the same way, they'll be like, oh, well, Orlando Brown was really bad at the combine, so the NFL doesn't like him. It's like, no, the NFL always had their concerns with him. They were concerned about his size and his weight, so nobody wanted to draft him in the first round. But, you know, they still took him in on day two. And that was actually something Justin and I have been texting about, was that, you know, what happens a lot of times with the draft and guys that, you know, help themselves are that they either check a box that you didn't know they have. So, you know, you mentioned CeeDee Lamb or like Justin mentioned Brandon Ayuk. Like, those guys both have the production. And so if Lamb's a sub 4.5 guy and then Ayuk's, you know, a sub 4.45 or like low 4.4s or, I mean, even under 4.4, now all of a sudden guys are going to go, okay, wait. And they're going to kind of go back to that. In the same way, if, you know, Simmons runs a 4.62, people are going to go, okay, wait. I mean, so like you said, like, the jump will be there definitely, like guys that help themselves, but a lot of it's going to be that the media is catching up to what the NFL already thought about these guys.
That's absolutely true. Interesting that two offensive linemen that Daniel Jeremiah talked about, one is Tristan Wirfs. That now he's the only one I've run across that actually likes him more as a guard, saying that he thinks he'll be a good tackle, but that he'll be a great guard. And that his combine performance, and he thinks it will happen, but how he performs at the combine really can basically
silence
any doubts about playing tackle. And maybe, so here's the thing. If Jeremiah is saying that, it's probably because he's hearing that from some evaluators around the league. So it's probably a real thing. And so he can gain, and he can kind of cement himself as maybe tackle two, maybe, or even tackle one, just because as offensive linemen, it seems like every year, the order in which they go in the draft kind of makes you go scratch your head. Like when the Raiders took Colton Miller 10th overall, and you're like, wait, or whatever, you're like, wait, what? Why? With the other guys that were on the board. Also, Austin Jackson out of USC, he thinks that he will test like crazy and as quote unquote fly up draft boards. Well, basically that's how the non NFL evaluators will know more about him and kind of move him up in rankings. What about guys that have the most to lose? And now obviously the ones that kind of have the most to lose, at least at the top of the draft, they don't work out because there's nothing left to prove. So Chase Young, there's really no benefit to him doing the workout. There's nothing Joe Burrow could absolutely do at the combine that would help. He's already projected to be number one. We've seen the tape. We've seen everything he's done. He can do all those workouts for individual teams at his pro days. So, but Justin, who are the guys that could have some status to lose in terms of perception?
I think, you know, anybody who goes through the workouts and doesn't perform well has something to lose, because it's going to cause people to wonder if they're injured or wonder if they, you know, if they maybe thought they were faster than they actually are. We saw this like a few years ago. There was a linebacker, Paul Dawson. He, coming out of TCU, he didn't test well. He was somebody that draftniks were saying was a first-round pick, and he ends up going later and then never really panning out. I think the name's escaping me, but there was a linebacker from New Mexico last year who had kind of the same thing. He ran like 4.9 and just kind of fell off the radar. But, you know, when you're talking – I think that if you're talking about a lot to lose, a guy like Tyler Johnson from Minnesota, receiver, who has at this point passed up a Shrine Game invite to work out and prepare for the combine, didn't get a Senior Bowl invite from what I understand, and then has now ultimately opted to only be measured and participate in interviews and push his workout back again to his pro day. Now you're wondering, what is he hiding something? Is he really not going to run well? Why is he kind of pushing every step of the draft process back when he wasn't even necessarily a Senior Bowl guy to begin with? Another guy I think has something to lose. I'll name a couple guys. I think even though he's very highly touted, Derek Brown, the defensive lineman out of Auburn, I'm not sure he's going to test very, very well. So I don't think he is going to – I think there might be some question marks of whether he really is a top five pick that he's been stamped with all this time. And then another one is the offensive tackle out of Louisville, Mekhi Becton, who weighed in at over 360 pounds. You don't see offensive tackles that are that large go that high in the draft, because they're usually not going to wow you with their athleticism. It's kind of one of those things, you have to love them on tape if you want to take a guy. That's not to say he can't be successful. We see Trent Brown and Orlando Brown having success at that weight, but it's kind of specific to the team and the scheme if guys that big are going to be athletic enough to be trusted at offensive tackle. So those are a couple guys that I think might kind of end up pigeonholing themselves with certain teams.
What about you, Seth?
You know, I think on the flip side, you're going to have a couple of these running backs that probably disappoint a little bit, and all of a sudden their size will come into play. You know, you talked about Eno Benjamin earlier. He's a guy that he didn't, at the Senior Bowl, didn't exactly measure in at you know, this Adonis-type stature. You know, being a smaller guy, if he runs a sub-4 or, you know, a high 4.6, that could potentially be an issue for him, where he's got to, all of a sudden now, he's probably going to be a late day 3 or undrafted type. Doesn't mean he's not going to be good in the NFL. Just means that's where he could fall. You know, I said I think his high end is a guy like an Aaron Jones, and they're similar build and size. And if he runs like Jones, that's where you're going to see him. Another guy that was kind of interesting to me, and I didn't know his kind of height weight situation until Justin actually texted me about it earlier today. And so it was one that caught me off guard a little bit, and that was the kid out of LSU, was it Clyde?
Yeah, Clyde. Edwards-Helaire. He came in at 5'7", 207, so very, very small guy.
And so, I mean, again, if he's above like 4.55, I can't imagine he's going to go in the first three rounds. I mean, a guy that's 5'7", under 210, and runs, 4.6 or slower, that's going to be really, really tough to sell to teams. And then another guy, and a guy that I love, and Justin, you know, and I are in this really odd fantasy football league where you can only have guys in their first 4 years in the NFL on your roster. And so a guy that I actually have picked up in that league, and he's massive, is Antonio Gandy-Golden out of Liberty. So he's 6'4 and over 220 pounds. But is he going to be a 4.6, 4.7 guy? Or if he's a sub 4.6 guy, I'm not going to, you know, say that he's going to be in the first round, but all of a sudden he's going to be a, you know, mid-day 2 type. But if he's running below a 4.6, I mean, he played at Liberty. Are you going to be able to take a small school big receiver that's slow, you know, kind of like a Laquon Treadwell type, but that a Liberty version of Laquon Treadwell. Can you really justify taking him, you know, in the top 100? That's kind of where I'm looking at with these guys that could really hurt themselves because their initial measurements were either, you know, off or were accurate. And now you're like, okay, now I need to see, like, what is this guy's speed like? And again, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be a bust, but it could mean that he's a guy that you're like, you know, like we talked about with Orlando Brown. All right, that's not a guy I want to take in the first round because there are those red flags. A guy that the Cardinals took a couple years ago, Marcus Golden, he was the definition of a red flag for a pass rusher because he ran like a 4.9 and his three cone time wasn't great. And so when you get him, you know, on day two, that's really okay. But if you took him before Shane Ray, everybody would have looked at you like you're crazy. And yet he's the better pass rusher and been the more productive pro. So, you know, that's the thing is when these guys, you know, hurt their stock, it's not that they're going to be bad players. It just means that they've hurt their stock in a way that you can't justify, you know, taking them in picks, you know, X and Y. Now you got to wait till picks, you know, Z, and then you come back around to A and B to get these guys.
Yeah, Seth, I think that's an interesting point too. And, you know, when you talk about Edwards-Helaire, and I think he'll test better than this, but you look back at last year, you had Devin Singletary out of Florida Atlantic who was small and didn't test very well. But then he goes a little bit later maybe than some people might have projected, but he ends up having a great rookie year, and it turns into an excellent value pick. If Gandy Golden runs in the low to mid 4.5s, then he's going to probably garner some Courtland Sutton comparisons, and you see what Sutton's done as a second round pick. So those are really interesting names, and both of those guys, Edwards-Helaire and Gandy Golden, find themselves in deeper classes as far as the talent at their position groups than the guys that preceded them that I mentioned. So, you know, they could end up falling even farther than you expect, but being great values.
And I do think that's a great point, Justin, and something that, you know, gets overlooked a lot of times. When you stack these prospects and you look at them, you know, and you compare on field and, you know, size and all this stuff. And so if you look at, and I'm just going to put names out there, but if you look at a T. Higgins from Clemson and then a Gandy Golden from Liberty, similar size, weight profile, Higgins played at Clemson, you know, Gandy Golden played at Liberty. So you put a bit more stock into the production of Higgins than you do of Gandy Golden. Now, if Higgins runs, and he's supposed to run a sub 4.5, but if he runs a 4.53 and Gandy Golden runs a 4.63, all of a sudden you're looking and you're going, there's no way I would want to take Gandy Golden in, you know, within 60 picks of T. Higgins. However, that doesn't mean that, again, that Gandy Golden's going to be the worst guy. It's just that the value on Gandy Golden now is, instead of being, you know, a top 75 guy, maybe now he's a top 125 guy. And so you're looking at him like, okay, if I can get him, you know, that supplemental or that compensatory third or early fourth, I'm a lot happier than I would be if I have to take him at 66 or something like that. And a guy, you know, that kind of fits that was Hakeem Butler. Butler blew out the combine last year, but there was a bunch of speed guys at the combine. I mean, there was a bunch of speed guys. And so Butler's lack of production, his concerns about drops, and his, and the fact that he didn't have a ton of route deviations on his film, now all of a sudden you're going, okay, I'd rather take a, you know, a DK Metcalf type who maybe has a similar skill set, but he's got, you know, Butler by 30 pounds of muscle and he's a full 10th of a second faster in the 40, because that's more value than a guy like Butler in that same scenario.
And of course, when you weigh everything out, it ultimately becomes a case of risk and risk and reward. You can and a GM and a coach, if they bet high on a guy who kind of has a higher risk, that causes them to lose their jobs. Anyway, coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to go kind of position specific. We'll talk about the offensive line. What are the numbers that actually matter? And who could stand out in this combine with the offensive line? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Okay, we've already kind of mentioned a little bit of the offensive line, but as we get down to the drills and the measurements, which ones are the ones that matter most, and who could be the guys to surprise us in this combine?
I'll defer to Justin on this because he's done kind of the research and looked at where cutoffs can be for, you know, especially offensive line players.
The chorus you're going to hear about offensive linemen is going to be that the 40 doesn't really matter. It's the 10-yard split. And I really just don't agree with that because the 10-yard split is incredibly volatile. It's a very short distance to travel, and even a slight variation over such a short distance, and the number is completely skewed. So I think it's been Green Bay's front office over the years that's really found that the 40-yard dash is actually a valuable benchmark for offensive linemen. And it doesn't mean they have to run like a sub 5:40. They don't have to, you know, blow the doors off, but you want something that's like under a 5:2 ideally. Maybe if it's under a 5:1, great. You know, then you're in really good shape. You got something to work with. I've always looked at the cone drills, the three cone and the short shuttle, because a lot of times you see these guys test over 8 seconds in the three cone, over 5 seconds in the short shuttle. I almost want to use those, not in every case, especially with guards and centers, but those can almost function as eliminators because you're talking about a guy who doesn't have maybe the greatest feet. And one thing that's always stuck in my mind is remember Joe Thomas, Cleveland Browns great, probably future Hall of Famer, who was asked like what he looks for in a great offensive tackle. And he talked about an offensive tackle moving like a basketball player, having great feet, having feet like a basketball player playing defense. And so then you're probably going to want a three cone that's under 7.7 and a short shuttle that's under 4.5, 4.6. And there's some research that suggests that the short shuttle, if it's in the 4.4s, that's a very good indicator of success down the road. I know, for example, Joel Batonio had a great 4.4 second. I think it was 4.44 in that short shuttle. So some of the guys I'm looking at who I think can hit these marks, Tristan Wirfs, who we mentioned earlier, Jedrick Wills from Alabama, who played right tackle, like Wirfs did at Iowa. But I think both those guys are athletic enough to play either side. And then Sadiq Charles from LSU. He's another guy who I think has the profile to test pretty well. He came in, I think, at 320 pounds or so. A couple guys who might not hit those marks who are right now being touted are Becton, again, from Louisville, and Isaiah Wilson from Georgia. And another guy she mentioned who might do well is Thomas from Georgia, but he might kind of be like a 50-50 guy. He might do well in the 40, not as well in the short shuttle. So something to keep an eye on with those guys. I think, again, the 10-yard split is something that you're going to hear drilled into your head if you're watching combine coverage or if you're following on Twitter, because people are always touting that. But it's such a volatile number. Imagine getting just even the slightest bit of a slow start, how it's going to affect you over 10 yards versus over 40. It's such a razor-thin margin for error. I don't like using that number at all.
You bring up the three cone, and then all I can do is remember having conversations with Seth after you and Seth had talked about it. Dorian Johnson for the Cardinals, whose three cone was in like something over 8 seconds. It was absolutely atrocious.
And yeah, Johnson actually was over 8 in the three cone, over 5 in the short shuttle. He's a great example because he was touted. He was a highly touted guy among draft picks going into those drills, and he just tested very sluggish.
And he was a dud once they got him in camp. So that's absolutely. So I kind of, when I see that, I'm like, oh, Dorian Johnson. Seth, what were you going to say?
And that was what I was going to say is, like, you know, we'll harp on this a lot, and partially because, you know, in today's kind of listening to this, you know, whether it's in a cab or Lyft or Uber or you know, on a train or whatever, people may not like finish the podcast, or they may listen to parts of the podcast. And so one of the caveats that we always need to give, and Justin's kind of saying it without saying it, is like the numbers don't matter if these guys can't play. So when you look at a guy like Colton Miller, Justin was never a fan of Colton Miller, and then Colton Miller tested like a, you know, an animal. I mean, Miller was a 7.34 three cone and a sub 4.5 short shuttle guy. I mean, his three cone is in the 95th percentile, his short shuttle's in the 91st, and then his jumps were in like the 99th. So he's a freakish athlete. But he was never a guy that you looked at and you're like, oh, this guy's going to be good, right? Like, so I think that's a caveat that we always need to put in there is hitting those numbers doesn't assure you that you'll be good. Like, you still have to be good at football too. So, you know, but a guy like you mentioned, Dorian Johnson, you come back to that and you go on the tape and you're like, yeah, he doesn't pull that well. Like, he's slow getting into blocks, you know, on pulls and traps. He's kind of more of an inside zone, and everybody always assumes, like, oh, you got to be super athletic if you're running zone. But it's like, no, you kind of – I mean, it's not that you have to be super athletic, but you kind of want a guy that can – or you're more moving kind of vertical and horizontal as opposed to laterally and in short space. And so – you know, when you look at actually power type players, those are the guys that have to be able to move because they have to be able to pull trap. They have to be able to get on deuce blocks and get downfield more so. And so, you know, one of the guys that he mentioned, Joel Bitonio, was a guy that I loved coming out of college because he was a guy that he plays like a wrestler. He kind of has that mauler mentality, but then he moves really well. So you look at him, you go, okay, well, he's a guard now, but like, he's a guy that you feel comfortable putting kind of interior. You'd feel comfortable at right tackle. He had some, you know, arm length size limitations, maybe at left tackle. But, and then the other thing is this, and you mentioned the Green Bay thing, and I'll never forget good friend of the old program, Justice Mosqueda. And one of the things he talked about that's always kind of resonated with me. And that's how, if you watch a lot of these drafts and you go back to, as you mentioned, the Packers, you know, we're seeing it even kind of with the Browns, you know, so maybe that's not the best example, but you look at guys
on,
that,
man.
you look at guys that played left tackle in college, maybe left tackle in high school. And when you look at that, you see typically, and I say typically because it's not, you know, 100% across the board, but typically a guy that plays left tackle is the best lineman on his team. And so when you get to the pros, you only have one left tackle, but you still need 5 offensive linemen. So, you know, if a guy has the movement ability to play left tackle, then typically he could play, you know, left guard, right tackle. It may take him a season or two, but they're a guy that can slot in. That was something that, you know, Green Bay has done, whether it was Brian Bulaga, I forget the kid's name that played guard for them for a while, TJ Lang. And then obviously David Bakhtiari. And didn't Corey Linsley at Ohio State play left tackle too for a little bit?
I think he was predominantly at center, but they honed in on him because he did he was, you know, kind of that squatty center build, and he was extremely strong. But I think the guy you might be thinking of is J.C. Treader.
Yeah, Treader, thank you.
Yeah, who played tackle in the Ivy League, and then they moved him to center, and he ends up being very good. Now, he actually does play for the Browns now. Okay. Betonio, like you said, made the smooth transition. On the flip side, you have Austin Corbett, who took over for Betonio as the left tackle at Nevada and tested well. But then when Cleveland tried to play him at guard, he did not do very well and ended up getting traded to the Rams, where I think he still started, but I don't think he's considered that great of a player.
Well, and Corbett was interesting because – and Justin and I and so you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but Justin and I aren't big on, like, bench press, but there is core, like, functional strength, and Corbett was, like, under the 10th percentile for his bench. Now, he didn't have an injury, did he? Like, he didn't get hurt during the –
I don't think so. I think he just – it's one of those things, like, you don't want to put too much stock into it, but when you see – a good bench, it almost kind of tells you that their whole weight room ethic and ability is pretty strong. So, I mean, it depends on a lot of things, arm length and whatnot. But if you see a good bench coupled with the other athleticism, it's a good sign. With Corbett, he was pretty good across the board in everything but the bench. I don't know that it was a big red flag for me, but I know that when the Browns picked him at 33 overall, the first pick of that second round, I was extremely disappointed. I didn't think he was a good enough player to pick at that spot, and that turned out to be true.
Well, and you know, to go back to Corbett, and not to pick on the poor kid because, you know, he's been traded, so he obviously sucked, but you look at it, and Justin kind of hit on it, like, it's not a big thing, but if you're a guy that's in a low weight percentile for the position, so he, you know, he came in at 306, which is in the lower third or lower quarter, so that's he's in the 25th percentile, but then you look at his arm length, and he's got shorter arms. Now, you know, arm length is always a stupid discussion to have, and I hate getting into it, but what we're talking about is...
I was going to ask that. What is... Does arm length really matter? I mean, obviously, A.Q. Shipley, it hasn't, but they've been trying to replace him forever and ever. So I was going to ask that. What is the importance of arm length?
I don't think it matters too much if you're talking about a guard or a center. And I think if you're talking about an offensive tackle, you're probably fine if it's a 33 and above. I know there's a lot of, you know, kind of mythos around Joe Thomas having short arms, but I think that's now been chalked up to mismeasurement and that he actually did have above 33-inch arms. So I don't think it's super critical. I think there's probably more research that taller guys with 33-inch arms do fine at tackle as long as they have these athletic traits that we're talking about. But for guard, for center, especially if they're 31, 32, it's probably not a big deal because they're playing in such a tight space.
But then it goes back to the idea too, like if you have that kind of bulkier, stockier size, and everybody has bad days, but like Justin said, like if you're in the lower than the 10th percentile for your bench press, again, that maybe comes back to the idea of weight room ethic, right? Like,
yeah, if you have short arms and you have a bad bench press, maybe you're just not that strong. I mean, that's probably a good that's probably a logical leap to make.
Right. And so when you look at that, like he's saying, you don't have to be great in the bench press, but if you have short arms and you're light and then you suck at the bench too, then you're like, all right, well, is this guy going to have the functional strength to be able to play in the NFL? And that was a probably, I mean, and that was under Sashi, wasn't it? The
Corbett pick was John Dorsey.
Oh, that makes more sense then.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me started.
But then, I mean, and to end this, you know, you go back and you look at the, we talked about it, and I couldn't remember the guy's name, and it was Jason Spriggs. You remember when the Packers took him? So he was a left tackle out of Indiana that checked all those boxes too.
Yeah, he goes to what you were saying earlier. Like, he was a elite athlete at left tackle. But then if you watched him at Indiana, he got his feet tangled all the time. He was just you wonder how he tests so well when he plays kind of so clumsy. And, you know, I was going to say this earlier, but if you have the offensive line coaching at the next level, you can make it work. I think Minnesota's done it with Brian O'Neill from Pitt, who is a converted tight end, and he tested great. I think he showed some real flashes at Pitt, and that was a guy I think the Browns should have taken over Corbett if they were going offensive line at that pick. But with Spriggs, it just didn't click. So, you know, you can make it work, but you want to have the athleticism to work with.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best star of Cardinals talk on the web, we move on to the receiving core. We resume to receivers. What matters for receivers? And now we've brought up some names. Who are some other ones to think about as who might surprise? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Next up, receivers. What are the benchmarks? What are the speeds? Maybe bench press. What drills? What measurements matter? And, I mean, we've all obviously talked about some of the bigger names. Who else could make a name for themselves at this combine?
I think if you're talking about what matters, I think you want to kind of differentiate what position you're talking about. And we all tend to lump all receivers in together, but you've got, you know, your split ends, your flankers, and your slot receivers. And Emory Hunt from Football Game Plan, he is one of the guys who really works to separate these guys, because then you're really looking at different things for each position. So if you're talking about the X receiver, explosiveness and speed is a great thing that you're looking for, ball skills and sideline footwork, because you're talking about somebody that you can use on the outside to attack down the field. If you're talking about a flanker, you want strong hands, yard after the catch ability, strength to break tackles, get off the line of scrimmage. And with the slot guys, then you're looking at the routes that they run, the quickness, the agility. So I think you're looking at different things. And if you see these different traits in a particular receiver, then you can kind of project into what his NFL role is going to be. So, for example, LaVisca Chenault is a player for Colorado. He measured a lot like A.J. Brown for the Titans. And the tools that he shows, the skill set he shows, I think kind of suits to a flanker role, where he's going to be a yard after the catch monster, a guy who can break tackles, who's strong in the open field. But I'm not sure he's super refined enough to play that split end role. So that's just one example. And you see the slot guys where if they run a 4.6, it's not maybe a death knell if they can show that short area quickness. And you can look at a guy like Hunter Renfrow for the Raiders, who caught a lot of passes as a rookie, even though I think he had more yards as a rookie for the Raiders than he had in any year that he had at Clemson.
Yeah, and so you look at it, you know, we talked about it earlier, 40s get some of these guys drafted higher because you can't coach speed. I mean, the Cardinals did last year with Andy Isabella, you know, a sub 5'9" wide receiver that ran a 4.31. And you saw it, you know, on a play this year when he ran away from the entire San Francisco 49ers defense, you know, on a deep over route, and he caught the ball and he planted his foot and nobody could catch him. And so that's a big deal. But, you know, you look at a guy like, you know, Mecole Hardman, again, another kind of just blazing guy. He got put in the right system. Whereas, you know, right now, Isabella's probably not a great fit thus far for the Cardinals, at least at this time. You know, Justin and I have preached this for a long time when it comes to wide receivers, because guys that measure at a certain height, weight, speed. And so, you know, we'll go back to Brandon Ayuk, and Brandon Ayuk had a nice measurement today in terms of he came out as a, you know, a bit bigger than expected, you know, 6'2" 205, and then he had an 80-inch wingspan, which was like one of the higher ones for everything, or for the wide receiver position. So if he comes out and he runs a 4, you know, sub 4.5, he's a guy, like we talked about, he's going to be a top 60 pick. If he runs a, you know, 4.56, or, you know, even a 4.55, the difference in his size won't matter enough to make up for that lack of speed. And one of the guys that we've always, that always, everybody always points to about, you know, the measurements and all this stuff don't matter, is Antonio Brown. And so we always kind of laugh at that, because it's not that it was that the measurements didn't matter for Antonio Brown. It's that they did matter, and he went where he needed to go and got into a place where he needed to be successful. And so, I mean, can you imagine Antonio Brown in 2000, I believe it was 11, but it might have been 10. Yeah, 10. Can you imagine Antonio Brown in 2010? You know, the Cardinals just lost Kurt Warner, and they go draft Antonio Brown in round 2 instead of him going to Pittsburgh in round 5. Like, the dude's out of the league in 2 years. That's just what happens. And so, you know, everybody wants to look at, oh, well, you know, these measurements don't matter, or this doesn't matter, or this doesn't matter. Well, no, in the game of football, it doesn't matter. But as Jess hinted at earlier, when you're talking about likelihood of bust, the more boxes, or the more spider web, you know, the more the spider web on mock draftable is filled in, the more likely they are probably to have success. So, you know, you get a guy like Julio Jones, who is just a complete freak of nature. It's likely that he's going to be good. But then, you know, you go the other way with that, a guy like Stephen Hill. Justin and I were actually doing draft work together when Stephen Hill came out, and everybody loved Stephen Hill, because he ran a 4.34 at 6'4 and 215 pounds. And so 4.34 is like an elite number anyways, but when they're, you know, over 6 feet, and now over 6'2, and now they're 6'4, and they're, you know, over 210 pounds, and they're running that fast, like, that's incredible. And so what do you do? Well, you draft him in the first round and then watch him flame out, because this is a guy that didn't really do anything at Georgia Tech. I mean, it's not his fault, but he went to freaking Georgia Tech. Like, they didn't throw the ball all over the field. And so when you look at receivers, you know, Justin kind of hit on it. Like, a DK Metcalf is a prototype X. Like, he may not be a guy that ever is a, you know, is a 1,500-yard receiver in a season, but he's going to be a consistent 800 to 1,000 yard, you know, 10 touchdown guy, because he's a guy that can line up at X. He can run go routes. He can body guys. He can get, you know, he can out physical guys because of that. His, you know, his lateral agility may not be the best. So you're probably not going to want to run him on a bunch of, you know, over the middle short routes, where he's going to have to start, stop, and make a move. He's a guy that you want to get on quick slants if you're going to go short, or just throw the ball to him if somebody's playing really off, because he can out-physical them. But, you know, at the same time, when people are like, oh, well, the NFL missed on this guy. Well, no, the NFL didn't miss on him. He's a very good player and he does one thing incredibly well. And so that made him kind of the perfect fit for Seattle and what they needed, because they have a guy like Tyler Lockett already who checks the more, you know, the more shifty kind of rack yak type guy after the catch. You know, a guy that had a good 40 but had really elite shuttle times, meaning he can adjust when he has the ball in his hand and make people miss and make plays. So that's kind of what you want to look at, you know, in a ideal world, and especially in today's NFL, you have three guys that can do, that can be interchangeable, that can line up in the slot, that can line up outside, that can line up, you know, as kind of a flanker or as a Z receiver. But those guys don't grow on trees, and that's where people struggle with, you know, a guy like Michael Thomas, and Justin and I, you know, still a joke to this day that we make about, you know, the other Michael Thomas. And this was a guy, because he didn't have anything in terms of size or speed or agility drills that was elite, he had really good broad jump. He had, you know, he's obviously a good size guy, but you know, he's a 4.57 guy. His vertical wasn't great. His three cone was, you know, in the 75th percentile, which is good. I mean, that's the top 25% of all combine participants at the wide receiver position, but it still wasn't great. But you could tell this guy was different. And that's kind of my whole thing when you look at CeeDee Lamb coming out, is I put him kind of in the same boat as a guy like Michael Thomas or DeAndre Hopkins, who probably isn't going to be a guy that lights up the, you know, spider web or the, that checks all the boxes number wise. But I mean, when you look at DeAndre Hopkins, he ran a 4.5 20 yard shuttle. That's not really very good for a wide receiver. Again, 4.57, and he's only 6'1". You know, Michael Thomas was 6'3". So when you look at what matters, for me, unless it's just a complete red flag number, like who is the big wide receiver a couple years ago that ran like a 4.9, Justin, or like a 4.8? Oh, I don't know.
Oh, Daronnia Wilson?
Yeah, never mind. He passed away, so we won't talk about that. Oh, my. But I just remembered that when I said that. But yeah, I mean, same type of thing, like, got, you know, rest in peace, but he ran a 4.85, and like there were people that were like, oh, this is a guy that, you know, well, he's 6'5, 225, it doesn't matter. And it's like, no, it does matter when you're talking about something that's, you know, that is that off kilter.
Well, and you know, I mentioned earlier guy, you know, Jeff Thomas, that he's going to run an elite 40 time, and Donovan Peoples-Jones, who's going to test above what he produced at Michigan. I think those guys have a chance to fit into these roles that we're talking about and check those boxes that we're talking about that put them into an NFL role. Can you imagine Jeff Thomas going to the Chiefs, for example? That's a good fit. Jeff Thomas going to another team might not be such a good fit. But one of the things that I know Jess asked about is who is a player that I think is going to surprise people. And with all that we're talking about, I think my big surprise, I'm trying to search for a name that a lot of people are not talking about. This wasn't a Senior Bowl guy. He was actually a Shrine Game guy, but he went to a big school. That's Benjamin Victor from Ohio State, 6'4", just about 200 pounds, just a shade under. He's got long arms, huge catch radius, and I think he's going to run a faster 40 time than anybody is expecting right now, in the high 4.4 range, maybe even low 4.5s, but it's going to be enough because Victor, he kind of fits that mold of some of these Green Bay Packers receivers that we've seen over the years. And I know at least one person, Jinx, who follows who we follow on Twitter and who follows us, likes for the Chiefs. So Benjamin Victor, that's my surprise for the wide receivers. I think he can really fit that X role and be a great value pick. He's going to be picked sometime on day three, and he's got potential. I know Ohio State had him as with an 11-foot broad jump, and again, he's been timed in that high 4.4, low 4.5 range. Might even beat that.
Coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We move on to the final group that we'll talk about in this show, and that is the defensive front seven. So that talks defensive line, your defensive interior, the edge guys, and then the space linebackers. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, and we'll wrap up the show with this final segment talking about the defensive side of the ball. That leaves us with not really talking about the defensive backs and not really talking much about the running backs, but in part that's because we think, at least Cardinals-wise, the defensive backs aren't going to be a major target that they have based on kind of what they have looking ahead. But the defensive front seven is a major focus that they'll have in this offseason. So kind of going with the same sort of theme, what would be in terms of, obviously we've got three different types of, you got the interior guys, you've got the edge guys, and you've got the space guys. What numbers, what testing things kind of matter the most for each of those groups?
I think you would hear that three cone matters a lot because people consider that a measure of their bend. I think the 40 time again and those jumps measure the explosiveness. So you see a couple different types of pass rushers. There might be some pass rushers that don't have great bend, but they are explosive. A guy that comes to mind is Yannick Ngakoue from Jacksonville. He was a prospect out of Maryland. He didn't have great flexibility in those, in terms of those shuttle drills, but he was very explosive. So you can win in a couple different ways here. I know Justice, who Seth mentioned earlier, had that kind of force players equation that he used to use. I'm not sure how prominent that still is, but the idea is still right. You would love to have guys that can do both, but guys that are elite in one or the other could also work for you. It just might be more of a situational thing. So I think that's what you're looking for. You're looking for that explosiveness, whether it's in the jumps or that bendiness, whether it's in like the three cone short shuttle kind of way. But you also have to look at how they win on tape. Are they beating guys with speed to the outside? Are they beating guys with inside moves, counter moves, and all of that kind of thing? It all has to factor in.
And I think the other thing is that we have to remember that there's only certain guys that are truly kind of freaks of nature at the position, especially along the defensive line. And so those guys tend to go early, and I don't want to say ever, but like when you don't get a guy that is a size speed freak or, you know, in the draft, or I shouldn't say that, when you're drafting interior defensive linemen especially, but then it goes to kind of the edge rushers too, if you're not getting a size speed freak, I'm a guy that doesn't believe in taking those guys in the first round. And it was one of the things I talked about last year with Quinnen Williams. Like, I was fine if that's where the Cardinals wanted to go. I just didn't understand the love affair or the obsession with it because, I mean, from a measurable standpoint, he's really just, you know, kind of a guy. And that's not to take a shot at him. Like, he was really good. But everybody's looking for the next Aaron Donald. But I hate to break it to everybody, that guy doesn't exist. I mean, there's not going to be another, you know, defensive lineman that runs a sub 4.7 at 285 and only 6'1". There's not going to be, you know, a defensive lineman that has a 116-inch broad jump or runs a 7'11 three cone. I mean, a 7'11 three cone is in the top 50 percentile for all athletes, like all athletes. So, you know, he is a guy that was incredibly fluid. And so when you look at him and then everybody kind of gets excited and hopeful. And so, you know, like a guy, you brought him up earlier, Derek Brown. I think Derek Brown's going to be a good player. But when people want to draft a guy like Derek Brown at eight, I look at it and go, okay, but what's the difference between, you know, a guy like Derek Brown, you know, assuming he tests like a normal defensive lineman and not like a, you know, a complete freak, and, you know, a guy last year that kind of didn't have the best combine, or, you know, a guy this year that you can pick up on day two. And that was my thing with Quinnen Williams is, you know, 6'3 and 305 or whatever he was, it's not like he tested out of the water. And so for me, that's what I kind of look at with interior and kind of edge guys, is that if you're going to talk me into drafting them in the top probably 25, then they better have three check marks by them. They better have that kind of elite production, and then they better have those elite measurables, and then they better not have, you know, an injury history. That, because that's my biggest thing with defensive linemen, is especially if they're quick twitch guys, if they have a knee or an ankle, I'm really hesitant to kind of go down that route, because that's what they rely on. And so all of a sudden, if they lose that explosiveness, you know, are they going to be the same type of guy?
Yeah, I'm a believer in, I'm still a believer in the edge pressure being better, greater than the interior pressure. And it goes back to what you talked about, Seth, earlier, when you talk about the best offensive lineman on a college team, they're usually the tackles, especially the left tackle. So you look at these edge players, they're going against the best linemen on the opposing teams. So a guy like Quinnen Williams, not to take away from what he's done, or Derek Brown, but they're going against the interior linemen on these college teams that aren't always that aren't always NFL players. So I believe in sack production, tackle for loss production, and that's why when you look at players like last year, they were talking about, there were a lot of people saying that Quinnen Williams was a better prospect than Nick Bosa, and I never agree with that, and I think most people now wouldn't agree with that. So even though Nick Bosa might not have had the elite 40 time, you could see that he had the pass rush moves, that he did have a strong athletic profile, and he did have that good production in the games that he played on a very deep defensive line rotation, right? So I think Chase Young is really like a slam dunk when he sets the – he's going to be a very good athlete, even though he's not testing at the combine this week. His athleticism and his pass rush moves and his strength are very clear, and he set the record for single-season sacks at Ohio State. And he was the guy who had to come up in the ranks behind both Bosas. And now, so I think you're going to look at Gross Matos, again, from Penn State, who's a player who didn't have that type of production. But last year, the year before, he still put up very good numbers relative to the position. And I just like the value of picking guys like that over the value of picking those interior linemen. Everybody's looking for the next Aaron Donald, like you said, doesn't really exist. So we see a lot of people, kind of similar to what you were talking about with Antonio Brown. People saw Geno Atkins go, I think, in the fourth round, and then have great success as a pro. And so people started wanting to find a Geno Atkins in the first round. It doesn't really work out well that way when you're trying to do that. A lot of people wonder why Grady Jarrett went so late, and he probably did go later than he should have, but that doesn't mean he should have gotten the top 10. When you look at the numbers, he's still not you know, he's not putting up numbers like Aaron Donald does, not by any means. So I'm still looking at those edge players. I like Gross Matos. I think one of the guys who has a lot to gain or maybe lose is Curtis Weaver from Boise State, because I think there's questions about his frame, his build, and his athleticism. He was a very productive guy. If he tests well, he's going to shoot up the ranks. If he doesn't, he'll probably fall into that mid to late day two range.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's kind of my wrap on how you look at a lineman. Like, you know, Justin opened the show with it, but like a Javon Kinlaw not working out is actually a huge deal to me, because I want to know how athletic he is, because he's a guy that seems to win with athleticism. But so is he winning with athleticism against, as Justin said, you know, car salesmen or and future, you know, JV football coaches? Or is he winning because he truly is that athletic? And it's the same thing with Derek Brown. I mean, that was, you know, my biggest concern last season with Quinnen Williams, and why, you know, I personally never moved him in front of Ed Oliver, because while Oliver didn't run, his jumps were out of this world at the combine. I mean, he had a 36-inch vertical and then 120-inch broad jump at 6'2 and 290 pounds. So, you know, that shows that explosiveness, and that shows you, you know, kind of what Justin was talking about. Like, when you're talking about finding the next Geno Atkins, like, that's the type of athlete it should be. And but then there should be the production to back it up, because that's where you start to get in trouble, is when you go the Robert Kimdiche route and you're like, oh, this guy checks all those boxes from a athleticism standpoint, but there's nothing to back it up there. You know, another guy that hasn't really completely lived up to the hype from a couple years ago, but you know, I think he's getting closer, but I mean, he's also in year five now, is Sheldon Rankins. I mean, people loved Rankins coming out of Louisville, and those were the comparisons, right? Geno Atkins, Aaron Donald. And he had a good combine, don't get me wrong. I mean, like, his numbers were good, especially his jumps. They were really good. But when you're bringing up comparisons to elite or like unique or special guys like J.J. Watt or Aaron Donald, just look at the numbers, and then you'll be like, oh yeah, those aren't even close. And so that's the thing, is like, they're not just better. They are on another stratosphere. And then when you go back and you look at the production on top of that, you're like, oh yeah, I definitely overshot this, you know, Sheldon Rankins thing or this Quinnen Williams thing. And again, it's not to say that they're going to be bad pros or that they are bad pros. It just, is it top? You know, when we're talking about the Cardinals, is it a top eight? When you're talking about the Browns, is it top, you know, 11 worthy to take a guy like Derek Brown if he tests similar to, you know, a Gerald McCoy? Like, is that a guy that should be going in the top eight? I mean, that's the question you have to ask yourself then.
Yeah, I would, as a general manager, I would be trying to look toward potential free agents that have already kind of proven it, then going for these guys. Because, you know, if you look at just from a production standpoint, you've got Kinlaw who did decent, you know, he put up decent numbers this year. He's gotten hurt. He had to cut his Senior Bowl week short. And then, you know, is he really like two or three rounds better than a guy like Laurel Murchison from NC State, who measures up to a similar height, weight profile, and then put up better numbers? And also, I thought, had a pretty good Senior Bowl week in terms of practices. So, you know, you're kind of weighing, like, when I talked about earlier, Chase Young is like head and shoulders above every other defensive end in this draft class. If you have a shot at him, you've got to go for him. But with Kinlaw, or even with Brown, are they that much better? Is the gap that much wider that you have to get those guys in the top 10? Or is it narrower and you can prioritize a different position because you know there might be a similar player available to you on day two, or even, you know, late day two, early day three?
Are there any other people that you want to guys bring up before we wrap this up?
I think Justin mentioned him at the beginning, and you said something, and we talked about it last week. So, you know, again, another caveat, you know, the Cardinals aren't necessarily in the need of a cornerback, but if a guy like Okuda falls, maybe if he, and guys from Ohio State typically test extremely well, but if he runs, you know, maybe a bit slower, or he doesn't, he doesn't put up numbers as expected, then he's a guy that I would think that you're wanting to look at. But I mean, from everything I read, it sounds like he's going to be in the low 4.4s anyway. So,
yeah, Okuda ran a 4.49 in high school, and he's expected to be in the low 4.4s. And you have evaluators saying he's the best cornerback out of Ohio State since Lattimore, and he's bigger than Lattimore. So I think it was pretty clear he was outstanding in the Rose Bowl against Washington at the end of his sophomore year. And then as a junior, he was so good early in the season that teams stopped going after him, basically. I mean, I think he's a slam dunk. He's another guy like Chase Young. I think there's a big gap between cornerback one and the rest. One guy I think we should mention that I think there's going to be a ton of eyes on, and there's going to be a ton of variation on how they value him, is Jalen Hurts. He's one of the most unique players to come down the pike in a long time. What he did as a quarterback at Alabama and Oklahoma, two major programs, he put up numbers at Oklahoma that were kind of similar to the last two guys that preceded him. And you still have question marks about, there are still question marks out there about where his valuation is, but I think Hurts has a lot to gain. And this week, as he did with the Senior Bowl, and I think he wins people over with his mentality, his competitiveness, his attitude. I think he'll do very well in the testing, and I expect him to compete in all of those because that's just kind of who he is. So I think he'll end up being drafted on the day two of the draft. But I'm really, really interested to follow his career because he's a unique player. He's not a great passer, but I still think he can end up being an NFL starting quarterback.
Who was the – I don't know. Did you mention the kid out of Texas at all, Justin, the wide receiver?
Oh, Devin DuVernay. That's another good one because we talked about Ruggs. We talked about Jalen Reagor. And DuVernay is kind of in that – similar profile as far as, you know, he's a lot like Reagor. He had over 100 catches at Texas. He's a player who might run a sub 4.4, and he weighed in at 200 pounds. He's kind of built like a running back, 5'10", 200, and really explosive guy. And put up great numbers as a senior. I kind of pinpointed him back in July as my potential Terry McLaurin senior riser, and he didn't have that kind of Senior Bowl that McLaurin had, but I think he'll have a great combine and get people chattering about him because, I mean, if he runs a sub 4.4, again, this receiver class is so deep that he represents great value if he goes in the third or fourth round.
And with that, we will end this edition of the Rise Up Cigarette Podcast, episode 259. We want to give a big thanks to Justin for joining us on the show tonight. in this show talking a lot. So obviously you guys didn't hear much from me. This was almost basically me listening in as the Draft Breakdown podcast from yesteryear's was recording. So we big shout out to him. Thanks for listening as always. Seth and I will be back next week as we will kind of look back. Maybe we'll have Justin on the show again next week to talk about what happened at the Combine, who stood out, who were the winners and losers, and kind of talk through Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury, the things they said. On behalf of the entire show, that's Justin Higdon, our guest. That's Seth Cox from RedEdgeOfTheBirds.com, and I'm Jess Root from CardsWire.com. Thanks for listening as always. We'll be back again next week.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red. Whoa!